The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov. Yeah, we're all keeping moving. We're heading into our summer season as you guys head into winter. So we're crossing over paths, but it all seems to be moving in the right direction as far as our reopening exercise is concerned. So yes. I think that's really what's, a lot of people are still focused on that. Mm. The restaurants are due to reopen, I think, tomorrow. And I think that that's going to be a key point in the overall recovery from the coronavirus issue. A lot of the restauranteurs are saying it's not only about the reopening tomorrow, but it's about the summer season in general and whether tourists will come along and whether some of them might not reopen tomorrow but be forced to close down later in the year because of lack of clientele. Of course, the summer season is very much dependent upon the tourists, and there is a concern that this year the tourists will not be here.
I see that if my social media is anything to be believed, the snakes and some really ugly and poisonous ones are also coming out of lockdown.
Well, snakes especially, but not only snakes. I think there's been this kind of general phenomenon around the world of animals just kind of appearing, that animals that you've never seen roaming around the cities before because of the fact that cities have been deserted. Towns and cities, not only cities, but towns as well, have been deserted, that all of a sudden animals are coming out from behind the rocks, behind the bushes, and making an appearance in public. There were some scenes from Eilat in particular showing animals that have made their way in from the desert, actually walking through the streets of Eilat, animals that had never, ever been seen before. And equally so, I think there were wolves that were roaming around some of the parks in Tel Aviv. So not only snakes, but all manner of kind of wild animals suddenly appearing in the urban areas, which has been a very strange phenomenon for us.
Yeah, very, very, very scary indeed. All right, taking a look at some of the stories. This week marks the 20 years since Israel's withdrawal from southern Lebanon. What lessons, if any, were learned from the Lebanese experience?
Well, the whole Lebanese expedition, if that's what you want to call it, it was never really officially labeled as a war. An operation lasted 15 years, 414 Israeli soldiers killed during that time. And effectively what Israel decided to do was to go into the southern Lebanese security zone in order to somehow push the enemy away from the border of Israel and to put the military into that southern zone in Lebanon so that the enemies who were trying to fight against Israel, to destroy Israel effectively from that Lebanese area, would be pushed further from the border. The problem, of course, is that the moment you go into somebody else's territory, it's not quite as simple as just pushing the enemy back, because within that territory, there are civilians who you suddenly become responsible for. And when you eventually decide to leave, there are major issues about what will happen next, how that area effectively, the vacuum becomes filled following your departure. We've seen the U.S. government, the U.S. Army having to deal with those issues on numerous occasions, Iraq, and other battles that the U.S. Army has fought over the years, and when they actually put the army into a foreign country and effectively taken over control for administering that particular area where the army is located, all of a sudden you take on a much greater responsibility than simply fighting a war or creating a security zone. And that's exactly what Israel found, that once they were in that southern Lebanese security zone, the battle in southern Lebanon and the 15 years that Israel found itself there. And I think that eventually when Ehud Barak was elected and came into power in the year 2000, and it was on the back of a long public battle where that was led by the so-called Four Mothers protest movement, Barak actually fulfilled his election promise and pulled the IDF out of Lebanon. And that in itself created major issues. The vacuum was filled, of course, by Hezbollah and other renegade groups. So It was not a simple exercise. I think ultimately pulling out of Lebanon was the right thing to do, even though the pullout itself created its own set of issues, many, many problems. But of course, no big fanfares, no big celebrations, no flag lowering, no big ceremony of any sort to mark the 20th anniversary of this occasion. But just simply remembering the 414 Israeli soldiers who were lost in the conflict. And I think looking back to say, going in and taking over the territory that belongs to somebody else in the interest of trying to maintain security doesn't necessarily bring everything that you want. And I think that the IDF has learned a great deal from that particular expedition.
Very, very, very much so. And I don't think it's one that will ever sit comfortably, I think, with Israelis. Let's just talk about the Israeli High Court of Justice. They annulled an order to destroy a home of a terrorist. Tell us about this.
Well, we've spoken a lot about the whole idea, the whole strategy that the Israeli government has of going in and demolishing homes that belong to terrorists to carry out terror activities. And Howard, you said in the past that it doesn't sit very comfortably with you and that you have a great dilemma about this particular policy that the Israeli government has. And it's interesting that this has now come before the High Court of Justice, which met on this issue on Monday to talk about this yesterday. And this relates to the murder of an Israeli soldier, Dvir Sorek, who was murdered in cold blood. He was returning to his yeshiva to actually bring a gift to some of his teachers. And all of this happened in August of last year. And he was just murdered outside the gates of the area where the yeshiva was located in Ofra. And then a group of people were arrested who were convicted of murdering Dvir Sorek. They were dealt with by the legal system. And there was then a decision made by the Israeli government to go in and to destroy the homes of these terrorists in order to bring even greater punishment to their families and to their greater circle of people who might have been supporting them. And the High Court of Justice was asked to rule on this point. And it was interesting what the court said in deciding that the homes would not be demolished. And by the way, it wasn't a unanimous decision by the three judges on the bench. It was a majority decision, 2-1. And the two judges who decided that the home should not be demolished decided two things. The first thing they decided was that the greater family were not to blame for what that individual did. In this particular case, the home was inhabited or is inhabited by his wife and minor children. And the court decided that the wife and minor children knew nothing about the activities of this individual and that therefore they couldn't be held responsible and they couldn't be punished for the attack that Mahmoud Atuna, along with other people in his group, carried out against Dvir Sorek. So that was one element of the decision. The other element of the decision was that this order was actually given already quite some time ago. And so quite a few months have passed since then, and only now has the IDF decided that they're going to undertake the demolition. And according to the two judges who ruled in the majority, they said because of the time that's passed, there's also another factor in deciding that this should not go ahead. So an interesting decision, and once again, an indication of the independent judiciary that Israel has that can rule upon things like this. And I think that it's good to have these types of issues come before the courts for them also to have a say, especially when there are so many people like you and I who potentially feel that we're not so sure about this strategy, the policy that the government is following.
Absolutely. This is totally perplexing to me that the Palestinian Authority have decided to return humanitarian supplies that were sent by the UAE, the United Arab Emirates, to help with the COVID-19 crisis.
So we spoke about this last week.
I thought it was posturing, in truth. I thought there is no way at the end of the day that they would return assistance from the UAE for the people who desperately need it.
Well, and it's not only that they're returning it, but the reason that they're returning it, I think, is the critical point here, because we spoke last week about the fact that there was the first ever direct flight by Etihad Airways from the United Arab Emirates to Israel. It was coordinated between the two governments. The plane itself was a white label plane, so there was no logos and no livery on the plane itself, but it was clearly an Etihad Airways plane for the very, very first time, coordinated by the governments in order to facilitate this humanitarian aid to the Palestinians. And what happened? The Palestinian Authority decided that it does not want to be the reason why Arab countries are normalizing ties with Israel. They don't want to be in the middle of all of this. They don't want to be held up to be responsible for the normalization of ties between Arab countries and Israel. And therefore, instead of accepting graciously the aid that has been sent to them by the United Arab Emirates, they would rather return the aid. Cut your nose to spite your face, I think is what someone once called this. In order not to be held responsible for the normalization of ties between the United Arab Emirates, because clearly this airline, the flight by Etihad was a very significant moment in the relationship between two countries that have no diplomatic relations. So this is not only perplexing to you, but confusing for me. I really don't know where all of that goes, but apparently it was all loaded back on the plane and sent back to Abu Dhabi. There you go.
So it's interesting to me on a number of levels is the Israel issue aside is how firstly are the people of the Palestinians reacting to this, because that has got to be a very, very interesting decision that they, or in a significant sacrifice that they are being asked to make. Well, and then the second issue is how are the UAE reacting, because they can't be very, very thrilled about having their gifts returned.
The answer is that I really don't know. I haven't really seen any reports about the reactions either on the Palestinian street or indeed by the UAE government. I suspect that the United Arab Emirates will probably kind of take this on the chin and move on. The Palestinian Authority is not going to be the making or breaking of any relationship that might be forming between United Arab Emirates, Emirate countries and Israel. Mm. You know, so I think that
the Palestinian Authority is potentially, relevant, yeah.
I think that they're potentially giving themselves a little more credit than is due to them, but that they are, you know, the reason why this is happening. I think that the reason goes a lot, lot further and a lot deeper than this. Of course, the Palestinian street is an interesting one, which we don't necessarily have access to, because on the one hand, there'll be people who will support the Palestinian Authority and say, listen, we don't want to, you know, be responsible for the normalizing of ties, and therefore we're prepared to go without in order to, you know, for the greater good of the bigger relationship. And I'm sure that there are a lot of people in the Palestinian street who would say that. Having said that, there are, of course, more than a few people who are very anti the current regime within the Palestinian Authority and who will have a lot of criticism against this particular decision, which is very, very strange to me.
Very, very strange indeed.